edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. And as we're recording the show, the zombies are gathering at the White House. The leading zombie bankers and derivatives merchants, the hyenas, jackals, and lampreys of Wall Street, have descended on the White House as if to underline that they run the show. The masters of human destiny, the bazooka boys, as they call themselves since the era of Paulson, have come to the White House to give bailout Barkey his marching orders. The zombies, of course, these are the people you've got to know. Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, Mac of Morgan Stanley, Lewis of Bank of America, Pandit of Citibank, known as Pandit the Bandit in certain circles, and let's see who else we have. Of course, Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, and of these, the favored winners in this new era of the Mussolini fascist corporate state would be Blankfein of Goldman Sachs and Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase. And Pandit the Bandit, I'm afraid, a little bit more expendable, but they're trying to bring him along, too. I don't know whether bailout Barkey and Tiny Tim Geithner, the TurboTax tax evader and derivatives fraud swindler, are going to administer a stress test to these characters, but you get the idea. It's a very significant meeting. And the question is, of course, that all of those banks should already have been seized. The fact that J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America, Bank of New York Mellon, Wells Fargo, United States Trust Company, I think it's called, the top five or six or seven, are all loaded down with so many derivatives, so many toxic derivatives contracts that they should be wound up. They should be seized, put into receivership. Today's Friday, right? We tape the show every Friday. Every Friday, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, with the operative Sheila Bair, B-A-I-R, running it, seizes some little bank in Podunk Center or some out-of-the-way place, and you find out about this with news releases late Friday afternoon or in the early evening. The problem is what Sheila Bair is doing is illegal. She is ignoring the legal, the laws and indeed the regulations of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, because those banks, in particular, J.P. Morgan Chase, with hundreds of trillions of derivatives, hundreds of trillions of derivatives contracts, credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, structured investment vehicles, asset-backed securities, mortgage-backed securities, auction rate securities, all kinds of options, futures, and other toxic forms of financial aids, financial cancer, you name it. They should have been wound up a long time ago, and instead you can now see the clear outlines of bailout Barkey, banker Barkey, and the system that he is trying to administer, with his controllers, Paul Adolf Volcker, Larry Summers, Bob Rubin, Mary Shapiro, Gensler over at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. They're attempting to keep the zombie banks functioning. When we say zombie banks, they're banks that simply sit there. They do derivatives contracts among themselves. They try to bid up the price of oil, and they've succeeded. They've turned the corner on oil. Oil is going up again, and other commodities as well. The zombie banks are playing a key role in that. So they have no useful social function whatsoever. And this is not new. They have been zombie banks from the point of view of production now for decades. They don't do loans, commercial bank lending, for plant and equipment to create jobs. They just don't do that. That's not part of their repertoire. They would tell you that industrial activity offers a rate of profit which is so low that it can't compete with proprietary trading, derivatives, and other forms of purely paper speculation. These banks are figments of the bubble economy, of the casino economy, of this globalized world of dizzying financial turnover, hot money fleeing around the globe in microseconds. That's what they do. They don't create jobs. No, they don't, and especially not industrial jobs. So they're zombie banks, but the zombie banks, of course, have now got their zombie puppet. So we've got a confab of zombies at the White House, and we've got to see what they say after this. The CEOs of the banks, according to CNBC, are talking to Barkey. They're giving him his marching orders because these are the people who put him in the White House. This is Goldman Sachs gave him more money than any other single source. So when Blankfein speaks, Barkey listens. Remember the old E.F. Hutton commercial, right? When E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. Well, in this case, it's Blankfein of Goldman Sachs and Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon, in some ways, acting as the unofficial primus inter pares of the group, of course, because he's got more derivatives than anybody else. He's got twice as much in the way of derivatives as these other banks. Now, the reason that the zombies are gathering today, that is to say the 27th of March, has to do with the fact that next week in London, we have the Group of 20 meeting, allegedly to deal with the world financial crisis and come to some conclusions. That is also why Gordon Brown came here to Washington. Gordon Brown, the British Prime Minister, of course, on paper, he's a socialist. He's from the Labour Party. But the kind of socialism that Gordon Brown represents is the finance capital variety. He has no interest in the working class. He has no interest in ownership of the means of production. He doesn't care about means of production. He cares about derivatives, swindles, hedge funds, purely paper forms of speculation. So at this meeting in London, the initiative, as far as I can see, is with Gordon Brown, with Alistair Darling, the British Chancellor of the Exchequer. Barkey will be meeting his darling in London. And Mervyn King of the Bank of England, the counterpart to helicopter Ben Bernanke. It's a prize gaggle of cretins, isn't it? A miserable excuse for an Anglo-American ruling class, we'd also have to say. Boy, the Whigs have come down in the world, haven't they? But Gordon Brown has a plan. Gordon Brown, you remember, is the guy who pioneered the whole idea of having bank bailouts. Remember, the first really big bank to blow was Northern Rock. We, of course, had Countrywide Bank here in August of 2007, blew, and then a month or two later, Northern Rock in Great Britain, Ireland, began to blow up, panic runs on Northern Rock. And at that point, Gordon Brown, with Darling and King, decided that they would inject hundreds of billions of pounds. They would nationalize that bank. Northern Rock has been seized. It's now a ward of the British state. The same thing goes for Royal Bank of Scotland, which on paper, Royal Bank of Scotland is the biggest corporation in the world if you count the alleged values of their assets as of about 2007, 2008. Who knows what it is now? Who knows what it ever was in reality? But on paper, from the point of view of bloated, fictitious, cancerous paper values, Royal Bank of Scotland was the one. And then Lloyds Bank has also been seized. So Gordon Brown is the most aggressive leader in the policy of forcing the national state and the taxpayers thereof to kowtow to the demands of these banqueteurs, these speculators who have lost their shirts and are now demanding new shirts and mink coats and tuxedos that will be paid for out of the public till. The central proposal of Gordon Brown, there are a couple, but the upfront one, $500 billion with a B, half a trillion, for the International Monetary Fund. Now, people talk about the Bank of the World. That is the Bank of the World. The IMF is the Bank of the World. Dominique Strauss-Kahn, former French finance minister, runs it, and that's what's coming up. They want half a trillion for the IMF. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Wes DeTarpa here in Washington, D.C., calling your attention to my new book, Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History, the second edition of that prophetic book, the book that told you all about deindustrialization of the U.S., the post-industrial rubble field of the U.S. economy after the ravages of Paul Adolf Volcker, Jimmy Carter, the Twilight and related forces of evil, told you all about the decline of the American standard of living, which was about 50% from LBJ to the last years of Clinton, now more like minus two-thirds on the standard of living, minus two-thirds of the Johnson mid-60s Great Society standard of living, all done through a deindustrialization, union busting, the race to the bottom, demanded, of course, by the Austrian school and the Chicago boys of Milton Friedman. So between von Hayek and Friedman, they have ravaged it. And then, of course, deregulation and privatization. Deregulation in the form of derivatives, which were illegal from 1936 to 1982, and then they were gradually made more and more legal and more enforceable, thanks to Reagan, thanks to Wendy Graham, thanks to Greenspan, thanks to Rubin, Summers, these people you see today, Shapiro, Gensler, Clinton, certainly. The derivatives now 1.5 quadrillion of cancerous bloated values, dragging the world economy into the abyss under the crushing weight of these exotic instruments, the ones that they're afraid to name, is, of course, derivatives. You know, as soon as you say the depression is caused by derivatives, then you know what was created by bankers, and you even know which politicians owned by those bankers, the ones I've just mentioned, were involved. And then, of course, the question of the casino economy, globalization, hot money flows, and then how you get out of it. The immediate availability of an economic recovery anytime you want to implement a package of 5 points of measures, which I'll go through later in the program. So that's Surviving the Cataclysm. You can order that immediately from www.progressivepress.com, www.progressivepress.com out in California. You can get the electronic copy immediately and the paper copy in some weeks when it comes off the presses. I'd also like to call your attention to The Obama Deception by Alex Jones, the best political documentary coming out of the United States in many, many moons, many years, many decades perhaps. Also important because it transcends the idiotic left versus right gang counter gang environment, which is what, of course, Obama's trying to create. He's trying to create Obama versus Limbaugh. Choose. Boy, was there ever a Hobson's choice. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Damned with Barkey and damned with Limp Paw. And, of course, the only answer to that one is a plague on both your houses. We want effective New Deal measures, tried and true, things that have worked in the past and will work again. The things that, in the form of regulation, the things that if they had been left in place, we would not be in this depression because we would have had no derivatives at all and Glass-Steagall separating J.P. Morgan from Chase Manhattan Bank. And now it's all one huge cancerous mass, too big to fail. That's the origin of your zombie banks. We've also got Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, the guide especially to the foreign policy of Obama, Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, the mentality of the current usurper or tenant of the White House, including his murky origins in a family that was somehow associated with the household of the most important British imperialist in Kenya, Lord Delamere, going back to the early part of this century. So a very, very strange package, indicating the desperation of the Anglo-American ruling class, that they had to put this character in there, the bungler, the teleprompter, who can't string two words together. Compared to him, Bush was eloquent. Bush, of course, was an open thug. This guy is a mumbling, bumbling character who can't make a sentence without that teleprompter. So, back now, though, we're waiting for the Masters of Human Destiny, the bank CEOs, to come out of their meeting with Barkey, the tenant of the White House, on the eve of this London G20 with Gordon Brown presiding. Now, Gordon Brown seems to be going in there with three main points. This is traditional British imperialism. This is London attempting to reassert itself as the financial center of the world with Alistair Darling and Mervyn King backing up Gordon Brown. These are the principal bailout artists of the world. They're the ones who got the ball rolling in terms of bailouts. They're also quite addicted to paper economy because they've got the most deindustrialized economy in the world by far. That's Britain. Completely destroyed economically by Thatcher and running on pure paper and speculation, derivatives, euro dollar market, you name it, ever since. Three main points seem to emerge. The first is the $500 billion for the IMF, so that the IMF, International Monetary Fund, World Bank Complex, will have money to lend, and therefore they can force places like Ukraine or Poland or you name it, right? Eastern Europe right now, big center of attraction. Turkey, Pakistan, all kinds of countries. Iceland has had to go to the IMF. They give you a token loan, but they make you submit to their conditionalities. And, of course, the conditionalities are straight Austrian school Chicago boys economics. Deregulation, privatization, union busting, the race to the bottom, austerity, lower the standard of living, loot, primitive accumulation against the population, speed up, you name it. That's the IMF. So Gordon Brown wants to make that regime stronger. He wants $500 billion for this. Now, interestingly, the sum that he wants from the U.S., $100 billion for the International Monetary Fund, for this police operation, basically a financial dictatorship exercised by this dubious French character, Dominique Strauss-Kahn. $100 billion. The increase in money for food stamps, the most essential thing. Will people starve to death in the United States, right? Will you get your $115 a month of food stamps for an individual, $250 for a family? Barkey and Pelosi were able to come up with $20 billion as window dressing, camouflage, for the food stamp program. $100 billion for the IMF. For the banks. This means banks in Poland, banks in Ukraine, banks in Georgia. They generally favor NATO puppet states, Anglo-American puppet states, needless to say. They use this as a strategic weapon. Some people are allowed to go bankrupt or indeed driven into it. Other people get this money. But $20 billion for food stamps. The prolongation of unemployment benefits, $40 billion. So you can compare it, and it shows again, Barkey gives the lion's share to Wall Street and a few crumbs for the people and for the middle class. We'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. What's the jump in Washington, D.C.? Talking about the zombie bankers at the White House with Barkey today, and they'll be delivering their demands for more trillions in derivatives bailouts on top of the $10 trillion they've already gotten, $8 trillion so far, and counting from the Federal Reserve, and approximately $2 trillion from Obama as a senator, as a backer of Geithner, therefore of the Geithner-Paulson bailout policy. Obama's got his fingers all over this. You remember, Franklin D. Roosevelt refused to take part in any of the bankrupt measures of the reactionary Herbert Hoover so that Roosevelt would start with a clean slate. He would not be hopelessly compromised in the idiotic measures of the previous Republican administration. Barkey, of course, great contrast to Roosevelt, the anti-Roosevelt, up to his neck in the bailouts demanded by Bush, Paulson, Bernanke back in the Bush regime. Really no change, same policy. Hope and change means Wall Street rules. So we're talking about Gordon Brown, Alistair Darling, Mervyn King of the Bank of England, and how they're coming into the London G20 with a demand for $500 billion for the IMF to make that the bank of the world, if you will, the worldwide financial dictatorship, $100 billion from the U.S., from you. Again, $20 billion for food stamps, $40 billion for unemployment insurance, $40 billion for Medicaid, $100 billion for the IMF. And that just goes on to the top of the $10 trillion that Barkey and Summers and Bernanke and Rubin and Geithner, indeed, have put into Wall Street. Under Obama, the bankers and the parasites get the lion's share, and the crumbs fall down for the middle class, the working class, and the people in general. And the crumbs are available for actual economic recovery. That's why the actual stimulus, 50, 60 billion, say, for infrastructure, is so tiny. He's got more money for the IMF than for the infrastructure of the United States. The U.S. is running an infrastructure deficit, which is clearly above $5 trillion. It may be $7 trillion, $8 trillion. And instead, we've got all of $50 to $60 billion for infrastructure. That will not be enough to hold off the threatening, looming thermodynamic breakdown, heat death, if you will, of this economy. Anyway, Gordon Brown is going in there. He wants $500 billion for the IMF. He wants worldwide regulation, a kind of a world financial czar in the IMF and the World Bank and some related institutions. Now, you can see what they're getting at with this. We'll get to Geithner's plan for re-regulation in a minute. They want the hot money, globalized casino bubble economy without its necessary concomitants. In other words, let's have the hot money, bubble, globalized casino economy with none of its disadvantages. Let's just have the speculative, let's have the bubble part, but not the crash part. And you can see that they're not thinking about production in any form. They're simply saying, well, we have this crazy derivatives economy. How can we make this thing fly? How can we keep it together and keep going and keep having new and bigger bubbles? So that will be Gordon Brown and Darling and King at the London conference. And then anti-protectionism. $500 billion for the IMF, re-regulate the world with the czar, and then no protectionism. What they mean by protectionism is something like Mahathir Mohamad of Malaysia, back in the Asian contagion, Russian crisis, long-term capital management crisis of 10 years ago, or 11 years ago now. Mahathir Mohamad slapped on currency controls and exchange controls in Malaysia. They worked fine. Malaysia fared better than the other countries that stuck to this lunatic free market stuff of just letting the hot money ravage you any way it wants to, right? Let Soros destroy your currency is what that stuff comes down to. So Mahathir Mohamad set a very, very good marker 10 or 11 years ago by saying, no, we're going to assert sovereign national control, and we're not going to let the hedge funds pick us apart and feast on our flesh. And that's what Gordon Brown calls protectionism. Obviously, there's also a role for things like protective tariffs. A mild protective tariff, 5 or 10%, would be highly salutary in many areas here of the U.S. so that you avoid dumping by foreign competitors. If you're trying to reindustrialize and reconvert, you've got to make sure that that there's a market for that stuff. Anyway, that's Gordon Brown's approach. Now, Obama has a funny situation with this, right? Obama knows that he's being attacked as a socialist here inside the country. He is no socialist. He's closer to the young Mussolini, who, of course, had been a socialist, but then became what was called a fascist. The young Mussolini from 1919 to 1922 to 25 is the model of the current Obama regime. We'll get to the question of the fascist corporate state here in just a minute. When Gordon Brown comes to the White House, Obama's probably thinking, if I'm too friendly with this Labour Party socialist from Britain, then that opens up a whole new attack on me. What I'll do is we'll have a dog and pony show. I'll orchestrate a few little snubs for Gordon Brown that I've told him about in advance so I can keep the heat off me and not be accused by these right-wing troglodytes of being a commie or a fellow traveler or socialism, right? Socialism, the veiled sister of communism. So that was that whole dog and pony show. And the right-wingers fell for it like a charm, right? They were all screaming that Obama had snubbed Gordon Brown, that he had sent home the bust of Sir Winston Churchill, and so forth. And that was what Barkey wanted. Barkey's whole game is he desperately needs left cover. He fears more than anything the emergence of a force to his left that can expose that he's not Roosevelt but the anti-Roosevelt. He's not the New Deal but the anti-New Deal. He's put in there by the bankers to make sure there will be no New Deal. And just look at the figures. It's about 30 to 1. $30 go to the banks for every dollar that goes into the U.S. economy, the middle class, recovery measures, stimulus measures, whatever you want to call it. $10 trillion for Wall Street and counting, and maybe $300 billion. A third of a trillion for actual economic recovery. Now I'm looking at Jamie Dimon and Blankfein and Penn at the Bandit coming out of the White House. Isn't that amazing? Maybe they'll deign to tell us how many trillions they got this time and what they told Barkey to do at the London G20. So in light of this, act independent. This is now the operative part. You need to go to actindependent.org, actindepend, independent.org. Get a copy of the call that we've put up there. The London G20 must freeze the 1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble. That is the cause of the depression. Not subprime mortgages, not poor people getting uppity and wanting to have homes over their heads, roofs over their heads. No. Bankers and their tools, the people like Greenspan, Phil Graham, Wendy Graham, plus Summers, plus Geithner, of course, now today. These are the people who visited the locust plague of the derivatives on the world. And the only answer to it is to get rid of it. Now, if you have dictatorial power in some countries, you just say, shred them, delete them, destroy them. Other places it takes legislation. But, for example, here in the U.S., right, we have a state of emergency after 9/11, which is still going on. If you wanted to do something against derivatives, you could easily do it. You could say, well, under the Trading with the Enemy Act and the Defense Production Act, given the fact that we have a state of emergency, we are shutting down the derivatives market. We're shutting down every contract that comes out that the International Swaps and Derivatives Association Master Agreement will declare economic war on them and use the Trading with the Enemy Act. There are many ways to do it. One way to do it is simply freeze them. You can call it a derivatives moratorium. Problem is many people don't know what moratorium means. Call it a derivatives freeze. It simply means no payments of interest or principal or anything else on derivatives for 5 years or the duration of the crisis, whichever lasts longer. Back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for Great Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Radio here on the afternoon of March 27th. We've just seen a group of about a dozen zombies led by Jamie Dimon. He's acting as the unofficial spokes of the zombie banker community. Have just come out of their private audience with Barkey, the tenant of the White House, and a one-hour meeting, again, about a dozen zombie bankers. And Dimon doing the talking, the Bank of New York Mellon guy, with dark glasses on was there. Notice also the difference, right? If you have Ford, GM, and Chrysler come there, they're expected to wear sackcloth and ashes, right? Arrive on skateboards and so forth. They don't seem to be grilling Jamie whether he took his private bullet train or his corporate jet or any of this other stuff. These are the owners of the Balky administration. We want to hear from Blankfein too, in addition to Jamie Dimon. By the way, when people talk to you about the market, they say, we want the free market. Oh, yeah, you want the free market? You know what the free market is going to be? Dominated by Diamond of J.P. Morgan Chase, Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, Mac of Morgan Stanley, Lewis of Bank of America, Pandit the Bandit of Citibank, the clowns over at Bank of New York Mellon, United States, Bank of the United States, and so forth. That's the market. Those are the people who dominate 90% of the market. You want to have the full fury of those vultures and hyenas visited on you, then keep calling for the free market, because these people would be doing even worse things right now if it weren't for the shreds of regulation that still bind them, and also the fact that they're now afraid of public opinion, and they're fearing new forms of regulation, obviously not from Balky, but there are some Democrats in the House who might be coming up with things, right? The spirit of the New Deal is not altogether dead, even though it often looks that way. So the thing that I would call on people to do, activism. These governments are not a million miles away. They're not impervious to what you do or think. You can bash them. You can get their attention. You can force them to do things. You can force them to talk about things, or you can force them to react in some way. And you've got to start somewhere. The libertarian idea that the goal is to get government out of your life is absurd nonsense. The goal is to get you controlling the government. Power will go somewhere. There will be a government one way or another. The only question is, who's going to dominate it? And if you remain passive, then Wall Street will dominate it for sure. If you mobilize, there is a chance you may be able to accomplish something. The urgent thing is to create a left, moderate left, New Deal alternative, a force which can criticize and expose Balky from his left. This is what he's afraid of. He's afraid of single-payer health care. He was going to exclude them. They threatened to picket him, and he caved. He's afraid of the populist pitchforks on the AIG bonuses, and even more on the AIG payments. $10 billion to Goldman Sachs, $10 billion to Barclays of London, $10 billion to Deutsche Bank of Germany, $10 billion to Société Générale of France. Foreign bankers bailed out with your money in the billions, not even the chicken feed of these bonuses, bad as that is. So there is a broad field, but of course, if you're just going to be a clone of Limbaugh and repeat the discredited nostrums of the Austrian school and the Chicago school, then you're just helping Balky, because you're making him look good, right? Balky can say, well, I believe we do have economic rights. I'm not like Milton Friedman, who says that there is no such thing as an economic right. So I urge you, go to actindependent.org. Get a hold of the Act Independent Statement for the Group of 20. G20 in London must freeze the $1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble. Any financial means that are injected into the economy will be absorbed by these zombie banks and their derivatives, in the same way that a black hole due to gravity collapse will suck in any matter that comes within the range of its gravitational attraction. The only way to do this is to wipe them out, or failing the wipeout, to freeze them at absolute zero with no molecular motion whatsoever, and leave them there for at least 5 years and or the duration of the crisis, whichever is longer. So you want to keep the derivatives from preventing an economic recovery. There's no reason to have 15-year depression. You can get out of a depression in a couple of months using New Deal methods, not the other ones, not the Austrian or Chicago or Keynesian. Keynesian is equally bad, or Malthusian, also very bad. But New Deal American system works. That's the lesson of American history. So the idea now is to get that statement to governments. I have seen that the statement for Act Independent to to get the group of 20 meeting in London on the 2nd of April to do something against derivatives has been widely distributed in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, in Italy, in Britain. It has been put in the hands of the government of South Korea, of Britain once again, of various trade union forces around the world. It is now displayed on about 500 to 600 websites, I would say. You can find it all over the place. What you'll find is at Act Independent is a PDF you can use for printing. If you want to print it out, it's written so that it fits on basically two sides of one sheet of paper. It can be used as a leaflet. And it can also be used, you can also get an electronic version, not PDF, but HTML, so that you can send that around and have that available. I urge people to get mobilized on this. There's got to be some voice of left opposition to the derivatives merchants and the zombie bankers, not the right-wing troglodyte approach, but the New Deal American system approach. Now, the parallel to this is very interesting. The question of fictitious capital. We talked about this briefly last time. The fictitious capital comes down to the problem of creating promises to pay, obligations to pay, property titles, various kinds of financial paper outside of, independent of the world of real production, outside of wages, employment, plant equipment, production, manufacturing, tangible physical wealth, hard commodity production, and so forth. Then, of course, once that's created, that begins to strangle real production, so it becomes not just outside of production, but against production. It begins to destroy production. So that's what you've got to look at. The principal example of this for the previous Great Depression, the Great Depression of the 1930s, was this mass of reparations and war debts that came out of World War I. The reparations were punitive payments, indemnities, imposed on defeated Germany and also the other defeated powers by the Allies, principally the British and French, at Versailles in Paris, 1919. It was about equivalent to 1 year's gross national product of Germany. So let's see. Today, it would be like saying to the U.S., you're a bunch of imperialists. You have to pay reparations, $15 trillion, please, that you'll pay over a period of 30, 40, 50 years, 5% interest. Well, of course, today that would be more like 10%. You get the idea. It's essentially half of the total value of everything in your country, all the real estate, plant and equipment, everything else, capital goods, every fixed capital piece that you have, half of that or 1 year's gross national product. That's what the reparations were. Now, this crushed world trade. It strangled world trade in the 1920s. World trade in the 1920s never reached the level of 1914, the pre-World War I level. And it also meant that employment, working conditions, wages, and so forth were all artificially depressed. So this got to be a structural weakening of the world economy, Europe, the U.S., and so forth. And by the time you got the question of the gold pound factored in, right, so Winston Churchill setting the British pound way too high, the economic consequences of Mr. Churchill by Lord Keynes, which is accurate as far as it goes, then you get into the Depression. Now, the interesting thing is, even Herbert Hoover knew that you had to do something to wipe out or at least freeze these war debts and reparations payments. And we'll get to that in just a minute. That's a model of what this London conference ought to do. Freeze derivatives now.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Radio. We're just looking at Blankfein of Goldman Sachs coming out of the White House, pontificating on the White House lawn to the CNBC reporters, joined by John Mack of Morgan Stanley. There they are, the Bobbsey twins, Blankfein of Goldman Sachs and Mack. Those are the two bankrupt counting houses, stock jobbing operations, derivatives monsters, proprietary traders, These are your super hedge fund lampreys that have now transformed themselves into commercial bank holding companies. They should be seized immediately. They're bankrupt. They're insolvent. Sheila Bair, where are you? Intervene, Sheila Bair. Seize them. It's Friday afternoon. Time to seize Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. And if you don't, Sheila Bair, that's a federal crime. You are going to be indicted someday for not doing this stuff. Now, the question is, they're undoubtedly at the White House to tell Obama what to do at the London G20 next week. They're telling him, kowtow to Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling and Mervyn King. I say, don't be the Lausanne Conference of 1932. Let's look at this for a second. The mass of reparations, essentially the equivalent of the whole gross national product of Germany, loaded on top of Germany, the economic heart of Europe, obviously, then and now, plus the war debt. So Germany owed reparations to the British and the French. The British and the French owed debts to New York, generally Morgan, J.P. Morgan, the buying agent for the British and French allies in the U.S. economy. That's how the U.S. got into World War I, with Woodrow Wilson taking orders from Morgan, as usual, in the same way that Barkey takes orders from Diamond and Mack and Blankfein and the rest of them, as we've seen, the zombie bankers of today. In those days, they were the merchants of death. I guess not much changes. So this weight, this massive weight of financial debt, crushing especially the German economy, but also the British and the French to some degree. The British, of course, with Churchill, go into a depression already in the 1920s. They've got 2 to 3 million unemployed. Unbelievable stuff. Deliberately done, too, by Churchill and by Lord Montague Norman, the head of the Bank of England. Today we have Mervyn King. Back then we had Lord Montague Norman. So it's clear that when the U.S. stock market blows out as a result of Benjamin Strong, a puppet of Norman, running the U.S. economy, generating hot money inflation as a favor to London to relieve the pressure on the overvalued pound, Germany goes into severe austerity under the influence, under the infamous Chancellor Heinrich Brüning. Brüning uses decree laws, austerity decrees, to cut the budget, to cause deflation. He cuts the unemployment benefits. Oh, my God. The Social Democrats cave and go along with it. The unions are thrown back on their heels. The Nazi Party is growing. And all that goes on in 1930, 1931, and then you get the fall of Brüning when he just can't keep going. In the spring of 1931, Hoover, Herbert Hoover now, and this is a guy who, his basic tendency was to do nothing and to trust to the free market, and he's being pulled backward at every phase by this infamous vulture, Andrew Mellon, the Secretary of the Treasury, who ran Harding, ran Coolidge, and ran Hoover, a friend of fascists and a fascist himself, certainly, Andrew Mellon. Tax evader, too, that's the other one. The National Gallery of Art here in Washington is a monument to the fact that this guy was a tax evader, and part of his plea bargain with the Roosevelt administration was he gave his art collection to the American people, which is why we have Raphael's and wonderful Italian Renaissance paintings here in Washington, D.C., because that was where Andrew Mellon was stashing his money. So from Andrew Mellon to Geithner, we have the continuum of tax evaders and tax cheats. Nothing changes. Republican, Democrat, same difference. All finance oligarchs. Hoover can see he's enough of an industrial engineer. He's a mining engineer, remember, and he's not quite as hidebound as Andrew Mellon. He's got technocratic aspects of him going. He says in June of 1931, he says, let's freeze this colossal mass of debt so that we can get out from under the depression. He says, we will freeze the reparations from Germany to Britain and France, and the U.S. government will accept a freeze on war debt payments by Britain and France to the U.S. government. And that's the Hoover moratorium. It's called for by Hoover in June of 1931. He wants it to go into effect fast. The U.S. Congress dithers. They don't get around to accepting this until December of 1931, but it means that as you go into 1932, at least for a time, the tremendous weight of the international financial debt has been more or less removed. Now, the problem Hoover had, he needed to make this open-ended. Again, I would say 5 years or the duration of the crisis, whichever lasts longer. That's what he needed. He did it for 1 year. That turned out to be totally inadequate and tragic as a flaw. Now, by the time it gets to be June of 1932, so we're 6 months into the implementation and 1 year after Hoover came up with the idea of a general debt moratorium of the most malignant kinds of fictitious financial debt, the Lausanne Conference meets in Switzerland. So it's June of 1932. And they say, oh, well, what we should do is have a general cancellation of the reparations by Germany and of the war debts. And at this moment, there's a growing awareness that this is the only way to deal with the Depression. That is to say, the prelude to getting out of the Depression is to wipe out the leading categories of fictitious, bloated, speculative, non-productive paper, cancerous, speculative instruments. And in particular, there are a couple of things that stand out. Senator Borah of Idaho, I believe, famous enemy of the League of Nations, right, an isolationist, made radio speeches saying, we've got to cancel the war debts, cancel the reparations, wipe out this basically fictitious capital, is what he's saying. The war debts and the reparations owed by Germany to Britain and France primarily, and the war debts owed by Britain and France to the United States, have to be wiped out. Now, Calvin Coolidge had said, they hired the money, didn't they? They've got to pay every penny. Yeah, that kind of mentality is what makes the Depression last for 10 years. And I'm thinking in particular of the obscurantist scribbler Calamity Schles of the Council on Foreign Relations, the leading Roosevelt hater of our time. Pretty pathetic job that she does in that book of hers of trying to smear FDR, a live jackass kicking a dead lion, as usual. Anyway, Borah comes out. He says, time to cancel war debts, cancel reparations. Where do we have somebody in the House or the Senate at the moral and intellectual level of Borah? Borah is a giant, morally and intellectually, compared to these people we have here today. But, you know, there are some of them, Marcy Kaptur of Ohio, DeFazio of Oregon on the House side. Gosh, Bernie Sanders, you know, even though he's got, you know, he's a sinner, Bernie Sanders might also be a possibility to get him to do something about banning, freezing derivatives. Senator Warner of Virginia, kind of right-wing Democrat, asked Bernanke, should there be a bright-line prohibition of credit default swaps? And Bernanke said, well, we might be open to that under certain circumstances. It's a throwaway line. But this idea is not as foreign to reality as you think. If even Herbert Hoover, the most hidebound, the most purblind addict of the free market in many ways, not as bad as Mellon, but in many ways very bad, willing to let the economy collapse in the name of the free market and economic abstraction, then maybe this could be done today. So G20, don't be like the Lausanne Conference. Don't punt. Take decisive action to wipe out derivatives. A couple of more things on this, and then we'll move on in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Inviting you to direct your attention once again to the Obama Deception, which you can get from Alex Jones over at Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, best political documentary in many years, a masterpiece exposing Obama and transcending the idiotic and bankrupt and obsolete left-right dichotomy, which Obama is so anxious to perpetuate. Obama versus Limbaugh. That's how Rahm Emanuel, the dead fishmonger, tries to deal with this problem of preventing the collapse of Obama's popularity. Not succeeding that well, but you can see what they try to do. Also, Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide through the worst financial crisis in human history, available from Progressive Press of California. That's www.progressivepress.com. Get a copy today. You'll have an electronic copy by the end of the day if you go there right now. And, of course, Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. I'm seeing who came around to Manchurian Candidate here. Some right-wing poobah has finally discovered that Obama is a Manchurian Candidate. Good. Only 1 year too late. And, of course, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. What it means to be a poverty pimp means that you're a scab. You're a strikebreaker. Obama's family business is busting unions, especially teachers' unions. Public employee unions are the big target for Obama. If you're a teacher, you better get Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. You can get that at Amazon.com. You've got to see that coverage in there on the New York City teacher strike of 1968, how the Ford Foundation did that, and how that has become the official strategic line of the Ford, the Annenberg, and the rest of these foundations that Obama works for. To be a Saul Alinsky operative is to be a strikebreaker. It is to be a scab and organizer of scabs. That's the whole point of Alinsky. Alinsky is a counter gang attacking the New Deal and using basically unemployed people in poor neighborhoods to try to bust unions. That's Alinsky. He's very radical. This typical fate of many Trotskyists is to fall for this kind of stuff, which is, I think, what Alinsky was in his heart of hearts. So we're talking now about the derivatives of today, the 1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble, which is the cause of the depression, must be removed. It's got to be shredded, deleted, burned up. We have the inventor of derivatives, practically, Scholes, of the Black-Scholes model, and the main model of how much derivatives are worth, since there's no market. What are they worth? He says it's time to burn them up and wipe them out. I'll get you the quote as we go on, but he says, burn them up, shred them, get rid of them, says Scholes. So that's it. Senator Warner wants to know, should there be a bright line prohibition of credit default swaps? Bernanke says, maybe. He didn't get huffy and walk out. He said, yeah, maybe. So that's the way the wind is blowing. Now, the Lausanne conference came at the midpoint of the Hoover moratorium, and what they needed to do was to say, we here unilaterally cancel reparations and war debts. We urge the U.S. to join us, but we ain't paying. That would have been an orderly debt moratorium, an orderly debt freeze. Instead, they punted. They left the initiative to the U.S. Congress in the last days of Herbert Hoover, a lame duck Congress, and that U.S. lame duck Congress in December of 1932 refused to wipe out war debts and reparations. Well, retribution was swift. Hitler seized power in Germany less than a month later. So from December of 1932 to Hitler's seizure of power in Berlin, January 1933, the skids to totalitarianism and chaos and the collapse of society were greased by the free market boys who said, no, they hired the money, didn't they? Sanctity of contracts. Keep that crushing weight of reparations on Germany, keep that weight of debts on Britain and France, and let's have depression and bankruptcy all around, and then Hitler, January 1933. The voices of reason in this were Bora, that I just mentioned, and there was a famous columnist, Alexander Noyes, of the New York Times, and he was associated with the idea that the getting out of the depression was just a matter of restoring confidence. It was all purely subjective, purely an attitude, purely the way you looked at it. Now, you look at the U.S. economy today. What do you need? You need confidence? Well, you do need confidence, but you've also got an economy which is at the point of thermodynamic collapse. You've got passenger rail, freight rail, and commuter rail at the point of collapse. Electricity grids at the point of collapse every summer. You've got water systems collapsing all the time. Drinking water systems, sewage treatment systems, water management systems, all collapsing all the time. You've got an interstate highway system where the bridges fall down and the roads look like a World War I battlefield pockmarked with shell holes, the potholes on these roads, compared to the German Autobahn or something like this. It's just a nightmare. So this is an economy at the point of physical collapse. And since we no longer have a full-set economy, the U.S. now lacks the ability to regenerate, to make good those losses with domestic production. You're going to be like that Blanche, what's her name, in Tennessee Williams, who depends on the acts of charity of strangers. So that is the summary. There was an attempt, and indeed Herbert Hoover, of all people, had the guts and the intelligence at least to say, let's freeze these debts for a year. Again, it should have been 5 years or the duration of the crisis, whichever lasts longer. He should have done it with executive order. Don't wait for the Congress. All sorts of emergencies going on. Declare a state of economic emergency. Wipe out derivatives. Wipe them out, cancel them, shred them. And if you can't do that, at least freeze them and then let the courts work it out. Give the lawyers something to do for the next 50 years. And the interesting thing about those German reparations, they're still paying. 2020 is the probable last payment by Germany on what's left of these reparations, massively cut down. 100 years of usury. And one world depression came out of this. Now, let's go back now and look at what Geithner and company are doing. Geithner, first of all, has come forward with his proposal for the toxic assets. Now, it's interesting, he's doing this from a position of weakness, right? Geithner is obviously a weasel. He's a sneaky, shifty little weasel, similar to Barkey, right, who's also sneaky, shifty, slimy, and evasive, President Teleprompter, I guess we'd call him. But Geithner has understood he's not going to be able to get any more bailout money out of the Congress so easily. So he's got a program which allegedly starts with $100 billion from the old TARP. In other words, the October of last year, $700 billion. And he says, we're going to create what amounts to a state-sponsored voluntary cartel of hedge funds and start buying up derivatives at public expense, at a 6-to-1 leverage for the benefit of people like Blank Farm. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
President Kelly of Bank of New York Mellon talking about his colloquium with Barkey there in the White House, how Barkey made sure that everybody in the room said something. About a dozen, I would say 10 to 15 zombie bankers, the owners of the regime, the masters of human destiny, the main derivatives merchants, jackals, hyenas, lampreys, and so forth, giving Barkey his marching orders. So, Geithner, toxic assets, $100 billion from the original TARP. Now, the essence of fascist economics is the creation of a state-sponsored compulsory cartel for the purpose of driving down wages, driving down production, and propping up fictitious, bloated, speculative values. This Geithner proposal fulfills, I think, most of the prerequisites for the fascist corporate state, the Mussolini fascist corporate state of the 1920s and 1930s. We're told that participation in this cartel, it's a cartel, will be by invitation only. And I think it's invitation, which is a summons. It's a peremptory invitation saying you're going to participate or else. In the same way that bankers were told, you're going to take the TARP money. Don't tell us you don't want it. You're going to take it. So that was a compulsory cartel. The TARP is by nature a state-sponsored compulsory cartel. And again, it's got to be to drive down production, to drive down wages, and to prop up speculative values. That's the full definition. You've got to have all parts of that. In the case of this new toxic asset relief program coming from Geithner this past week, 6-to-1 leverage. So if I'm Goldman Sachs, I put up $1 million, the government will put up $6 million, or let's make it $100 billion, and they'll put up $600 billion or whatever it is. That's the leverage. Now, notice with this that the profit, the upside, is in the hands of Goldman Sachs. The only thing that the taxpayer can do is get your money back. In other words, if it's 6-to-1 leverage, the government is putting in 6, the bankers are putting in 1, but all the upside is in the hands of the 1. The bankers, the hedge fund boys, the derivatives merchants get all of the upside, all of the profits, and the only thing is, at best, the taxpayers get their money back. But since you're dealing with derivatives, they won't even get that back. So since it's looks like it's sort of semi-compulsory, I think we can say this fulfills the criteria for the Mussolini fascist corporate state. $100 billion, it's a joke. Notice it's very heavily, you know, $6 of public money for every dollar of Wall Street money. And again, how futile, how pointless. You're dealing with a 1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble, notional values, meaning the value of the underlying assets. It's going to be too little too late. It won't work. Now, we've also got Geithner coming forward with regulation. And again, what he wants is, we could call it a Keynesian totalitarian liberal approach. Lord Keynes was known for the idea that not only could fascists, have the dragooning and regimentation of the economies, not only could Bolsheviks do this, but liberals, British Whigs, could do that too. So Keynesian totalitarian liberalism rides again with Geithner. So he's got the fascist corporate state for the derivatives and then a regulatory regime of Keynesian totalitarian liberalism. And the idea, of course, is that we're going to continue to have a derivatives-based casino bubble economy based on speculation, the pursuit of bloated speculative values, cancerous and fictitious forms of capital formation. But without the defects. And then he wants to be able to seize businesses. Now, I think the idea is something like this. We saw Sheila Bair in the fall seize Washington Mutual, a very large, the largest savings bank of the U.S., with a significant deposit base, and feed that into the belly of the derivatives monster, J.P. Morgan Chase. And there's people screaming about that on the Yahoo message boards for Jamie Dimon's company. The idea now is that the big fish will devour, will phagocytate the little fish, so that the smaller banks are going to be fed into the jaws of Citibank, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of New York Mellon, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and so forth. That's what they want to do. They want to be able to seize companies that are probably viable and possibly solvent, and feed them into the derivatives monsters to keep those going for another few months. And, of course, that is another example of totalitarian liberalism. So that is all to be rejected. Geithner obviously has to be fired. Impeach Geithner. Fire Geithner. This is the Rubin, Summers, Shapiro, Gensler clique. Now, these are the people who brought you derivatives. They're also the people who brought you the formal abolition of Glass-Steagall, the firewall between the stock-jobbing speculative side and the commercial bank and depository institution side. Notice this woman, Shapiro, at the Securities and Exchange Commission, has still not done anything to stop naked shorting, has not put in the uptick rule, has not re-regulated the margin requirements or any other thing. And this Gensler, even worse, at Commodity Futures Trading Commission, refuses to regulate the commodities markets. This is why the price of oil is going up. Thanks to Gensler, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and the hedge funds are driving up the price of oil once again. What you've got to have there is position limits. You've got to distinguish between users and hedgers, speculators and hedgers. And you've got to have 100% margin requirements. So you want to speculate? Great. Put it all up 100% in cash to discourage that. And if somebody's buying and selling on the ICE and they try to bring that from London into the United States, say, wait a minute, sorry, boys, you want to have it distributed in the U.S., then we will regulate that market over there. So re-regulation, you won't get that from Reuben, Summers, Shapiro, and Gensler. Again, it's the anti-New Deal. There's not even somebody here at the level of Joseph P. Kennedy, the first head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, interestingly enough, there has been, over the past week or so, something which appears some of these people, I think, actually can be considered to be to Barkey's left, although some of them are also fakers. But let's go through some of them. They're all flawed, more or less, but some of them, I think, are people of goodwill. Let's start with Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize winner, Princeton professor. He says he's in despair about the Obama regime. The Wall Street control is pervasive. The zombie ideas have returned, and they rule the Obama administration. What he means by zombie ideas is the original Paulson plan to buy up toxic assets, meaning derivatives, of course, which has been now been through three transmogrifications. The original Paulson, which was then abandoned, the Deissner bad bank or aggregator bank of early February, gone now, but again, coming back again now in the form of this $100 billion toxic assets, government-sponsored hedge fund cartel, the U.S. government becoming a hedge fund and buying up derivatives. So this is a recycled idea of Paulson, says Krugman, and it's cash for trash, that somehow the taxpayer is obligated to make good on derivatives that should have been illegal all the time and really were. From 1936 to 1982, they were illegal. And then thanks to the Austrians and the Chicago boys, they became legal. Thanks to Phil Graham and Wendy Graham, they're the Bonnie and Clyde of derivatives back in the 1990s. So that's Krugman. Zombie ideas, cash for trash, Wall Street runs Obama, result despair. Galbraith, this is the son of John Kenneth Galbraith. He's in disguise in Texas. He says that Geithner is controlled by massively corrupted banks, and it's going to fail. This is the policy will fail, and it's time to seize the banks. He doesn't say zombie banks, but that's the idea. Back in a minute.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Absolute consternation. People are appalled by the ineptitude of Geithner. Just remember, Geithner is a lightning rod. If for every attack on Geithner, there's got to be an attack on Obama, because Obama is the one who lets Geithner do all this. And, of course, the people in the background, Summers and Paul Adolf Volcker, the great deindustrializer, the greatest usurer of the 20th century, also in the White House. So Krugman says the zombie ideas have been recycled back again. Wall Street is ruling the Obama regime, and they're imposing cash for trash, taxpayer money for derivatives. Galbraith says that Geithner is under the control of massively corrupted banks. This plan of the Treasury will fail. It's time to seize the banks, the zombie banks, I would add. He says we should have a publicly run bank on the model of the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. Well, why do that? Why don't you seize the Fed and make them do what you've got to do? You want a bank? The government has a bank. Seize it. Make them do what needs to be done to get a recovery. And he's looking at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. One of the things with Geithner's zombie bank and toxic asset plan is that it tends to increase the risk to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation because they're expected to cough up some of this money. So that's interesting from Galbraith. He proposes, if you want to have a stimulus, to add one-third to the average Social Security pension. I'm glad to hear that. I have proposed on this program, as you know, the doubling of the Social Security pension because the 401k is gone, whatever you think. If you have to hold it, you can't go short. They designed the 401k, so you can't go short. You can't get out of it. You've got to be long, and that means it's over. And if you think you have private medical insurance, that's going to be gone, too, because those companies are zombie insurance companies. They'll be going down, too. They've got to somehow bootleg onto the health care program of Obama. So Krugman, Galbraith, how about Grider at, what is it, Rolling Stone? He says that this is the bailout of the banks. It's dictated by the elites. We're finding lots and lots of money, hundreds of billions, trillions for the banks, but then these same elites turn around and say it's time for entitlement reform, which is code for whacking Social Security, whacking Medicare, whacking Medicaid, and essentially austerity for the people and largesse for the bankers. Frank Rich of the New York Times, drooling acolyte of Obama, he's now appalled by the AIG bonuses, and again, the AIG bonuses are bad, but they're the smokescreen. They're a limited hangout, if you will, for the fact that AIG gave $10 billion to Goldman Sachs, approximately, give or take, $10 billion to Goldman Sachs, $10 billion to Barclays of Britain, $10 billion to Deutsche Bank of Germany, $10 billion to Societe Generale of France. If it's so serious, let Gordon Brown, Merkel, and Sarkozy bail out their own banks, please, globalized finance oligarchs. Even Jeffrey Sachs is trying to get back with left cover. Jeffrey Sachs, who destroyed Bolivia, destroyed Poland, visited IMF shock therapy on Russia. What a ghoul. He's also now in the business of saying what you need to do for Africa is give them mosquito nets. No, Jeffrey, give them comprehensive industrial, technological, and scientific development for Africa. Cape to Cairo maglev, Dakar to Djibouti maglev, Congo River, Nile River, integrated internal waterway, second Nile in North Africa, maglev across the Maghreb, you get the idea. He says, no, it just comes down to some mosquito nets. Pathetic. But even Jeffrey Sachs is in there attacking Obama. So Krugman, Galbraith, Grider, Frank Rich, Mo Dowd says the wrong, this is Maureen Dowd, the decadent lady there at the New York Times. She says the wrong Obama. She thinks Michelle is better, but that's her way of getting against Barkey. So this leaves us then with a need to mobilize on this. Remember, we know how to end a depression. 5 points. Re-regulate the economy. That means wipe out derivatives, ban them. Wipe out hedge funds. Outlaw adjustable rate mortgages. Stop foreclosures. Preserve the economy. Re-regulate the commodities markets, right? We talked about this before. Prevent Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley from bidding up the price of oil again this summer like they did last summer, which is what they seem to be preparing to do. Re-regulate the stock market. Re-regulate basically everything in sight, but not in the totalitarian liberal method of Geithner, not this stuff that we're going to seize you, but simply outlaw the worst forms of speculation. Seize the Federal Reserve, nationalize it, fourth bank of the United States, and then with public laws from the Congress and the President, discussed in the full view of the people, set interest rates and essentially make them zero, $1 trillion tranche, 0% federal credit, federal lending, not federal spending. Federal spending, too, but mainly federal lending, $1 trillion to start with, for production only, industry, mining, agriculture, manufacturing, scientific research, hard commodity, tangible physical wealth. Then you've got to have a whole series of infrastructure projects, 100 high-temperature, fourth-generation pebble-bed nuclear reactors. Maglev, 50,000 miles of maglev for the U.S., as fast as you can get it. Water systems, rebuild them all. Sewage systems, rebuild those. Irrigation, make the desert bloom. Imperial Valley becomes the entire Central Valley of California. Negotiate with Canada to get that Mackenzie River turned around and get the water going down all the way into northern Mexico, the old Nahuapa from the Parsons Company, right? Parsons is either going to be in Iraq losing money and participating in the mayhem or doing this kind of stuff. Give these people something socially useful that they can do to help the world get out of depression. You're also going to need 1,000 hospitals. You're going to need to rebuild a lot of schools, but 1,000 hospitals with all the equipment in them to make up for what's been destroyed in the inner-city ghettos, the high plains, rural America, and so forth. You've also got then to massively fund your science drivers. This is $50 to $100 billion each for your space program, which means exploration, colonization, permanent, and industrial production, moon, Mars, nearby objects, and so forth, high-energy physics, thermonuclear fusion power. Then biomedical research. You want to save money on health care? There's only one way to do it that doesn't get you dangling at the Nuremberg noose. The only way is find cures. Cure cancer, cure diabetes, cure tuberculosis, malaria, and so forth. Massive effort to free humanity from the scourge of dread diseases and make that an international program, as indeed all these should be. So you've got your massive infrastructure to reverse, to stop and reverse the thermodynamic collapse of the U.S. economy. You've got your science drivers. Then you've got to reconvert Detroit to build things like nuclear reactors, tractors, rolling stock for magnetic levitation, railways, airframes, space products, right? Turnkey cities for the moon and Mars. That gets you a recovery. It gets you out of the hell of world economic depression. We also have to mention the question of false flag. We don't have time to do too much with this today, but you look around, right, look at the DPRK, North Korea, possible missile launch, we're told, possible nuclear detonation, Sudan, big attack on General Bashir, indicted, attempt to overthrow him, Pakistan, predator drones killing 40, 50 people a day now. It looks like the door to false flag, of course, is open. And to the degree that Barkey begins to crater as Obama gets into deep, deep trouble with public opinion, and that is beginning to happen, I think. Polls seem to indicate a significant erosion. Then the possibility of false flag emerges. The Czech government, the Czech parliament has said no to the radar. Go Czechs. That's a good step by the Czech parliament. The prime minister, I think he's a he's some kind of a right-wing proselyte, but he attacked Barkey and the U.S. road to hell. Well, welcome to that, too. But the main thing is go to actindependent.org, get the copy of the Act Independent Statement to the Group of 20 meeting in London, April 2nd. Freeze the 1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble. Get that out to the governments, parties, trade unions, forces of goodwill around the world, and we'll see you next week on World Crisis Radio.